Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Go for Two edition, as the Bengals look for their second win in a row this Sunday as they host the Buffalo Bills. Coming up, we'll be joined by a guy you see every week on the NFL Today on CBS. He is a former quarterback. He has blonde hair, and he has a Super Bowl ring, which unfortunately means I am not referring to Boomer Esiason. I am referring to Phil Sims, who had some very interesting things to say about just how tough the Buffalo Bills are, how much better Andy Dalton has looked over the past couple of weeks, and a factor I had not considered that might help the Bengals pull one out this Sunday. We'll check in with my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham, to talk about the matchup and get his keys to the game. In our Fun Facts segment, it's everything you ever wanted to know about rookie defensive tackle Ryan Glasgow. And since the Bengals are playing the Buffalo Bills this week, I'll share the true story of how O.J. Simpson almost caused me to freeze to death. Before we get rolling, here's a reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast sent directly to you on your phone, tablet, or computer as soon as it's posted by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. It's the greatest invention since boxer shorts. If you're a male, no further explanation is needed. The Bengals are 1-3. The Bills are 3-1, with wins over the Jets, Broncos, and Falcons. They beat the defending NFC champs in Atlanta last Sunday. Nonetheless, the Bengals are a 3-point favorite at home this week. Time to bring in my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham, for more on the matchup. Lap, the Bengals host the Buffalo Bills this week. Buffalo has a 17-year playoff drought. That is the longest of the 123 teams in the four major sports in the U.S. But they're 3-1 this year. Are the Bills legit?
I think they are, Dan. I mean, they're played some pretty good football teams. They lost to Carolina 9-3. Could have won that football game, and that was in Carolina. They beat Denver at home. Then they go on the road, and they beat Atlanta 23-17. That high-powered offense was stagnated by the dominant Buffalo Bills defense, and that's the key to their football team. They're number one in the NFL in points allowed. They've only given up four touchdowns, which is fewest in the NFL. One of those touchdown pass, just one touchdown pass in four games, which is amazing. And every touchdown has been a red zone touchdown, so they have not let big chunk explosive plays get over their head and hurt them. And basically, they take care of the football. They only have one turnover, and their defense doesn't allow points, so they don't beat themselves, and their defense is playing great. And I think they're legit. They have a running game. They've got some components, Dan. I think this might be a year where they may break that spell.
Lap, that Buffalo defense, number one in the NFL at fewest points allowed, about 13 a game. What makes Buffalo so good on D?
Boy, I think Leslie Frazier is doing a great job of blending his schematic with the personnel groups. I mean, I think he's playing more of a pure 4-3 defense where he's rushing four and dropping seven into coverage, and he's really utilizing his talent. I mean, Shaq Lawson from Clemson is the number one pick. Jerry Hughes came into the league with the Indianapolis Colts as a number one draft pick. Marcel Darius, number one draft pick. I mean, they have talent up front. Kyle Williams is a stud. He's been there for a long time. The defensive tackle tandem is extraordinary. They also throw another pass rusher in there. Lorenzo Alexander had 12.5 sacks last year. I mean, they can get after the quarterback. And then on the back end, they basically went into free agency in the draft and retooled it on the back end. Tre'Davious White, first-round pick at one corner. They signed Micah Hyde from Green Bay at safety. He's tied for the league lead in interceptions with three. Every starter in the secondary has at least one interception. They're playing great football. When the pass rush is there, the secondary is making plays. When the pass rush isn't there, the secondary is covering until the pass rush does get there. I mean, the hands fit in the glove in every way, shape, or form for this defensive football team.
Lap, since Bill Lazor became the Bengals' offensive coordinator a couple of games ago, Andy Dalton has thrown six touchdown passes with no interceptions and a passer rating of 138.1. How much credit should we give Bill Lazor?
I think we should give him a lot of credit. You know, I think that the thing that he's done in both of those football games, he's run the football 30 times and not been rewarded with a great efficiency in that running game. You know, my thing is 4 yards or more 60% of the time. Against Green Bay, it was 33.3%. In the victory against Cleveland, it was only 36%. So they are not consistently pounding the rock, but he is consistently staying with the running game. 30 runs, 30 passes in Cleveland. I mean, they were saying, look, you're going to have to throw it to beat us. And Bill's saying, okay, you better continue to stop the run. And then we're still going to throw it. And we're still going to take advantage of spaces down the middle of the football field. I think he's been brilliant with that. And I do think the quick rhythm passing game, the quick tempo, whatever you want to call it, is Andy Dalton's forte. Over the years, when he's gotten the ball out of his hand in 2.5 seconds, he's been dynamic. And Ken Zampezi get away from that. Started doing five-step drop stuff. You can't. They don't have the pass protectors. Laser knows that. Getting the ball out of his hand makes the pass protection look better. Makes the quarterback look better. Everybody's happy.
Thanks, Lap. We discussed the Bills' defense at length, but didn't spend much time on Buffalo's offense. Well, it's not great. The Bills are 23rd in the league in scoring at 18 points a game and 29th in total yards. But they don't turn the ball over. Quarterback Tyrod Taylor threw a red zone interception on the Bills' opening drive of the season, and Buffalo has not turned it over again since. They've gone 43 possessions without a turnover. Buffalo's best weapon is running back LeSean Shady McCoy. Since entering the NFL in 2009, the five-time Pro Bowler has more rushing yards, 9,000-plus, and more total yards from scrimmage, 12,000-plus, than any other player in the league. Just listen to what Carlos Dunlap had to say about McCoy.
Toughest guy to tackle in open field or if you got a couple steps on you. Obviously, you know, there's guys that are hard runners and there's guys that are elusive. He's the most elusive guy that I've ever seen play football. One-on-one in the open field, he's making the first guy miss every time, maybe the second and third guy.
Yeah, he never seems to do anything running straight to me. There's always a wiggle there.
Yeah, if he played basketball, he'd be like an Allen Iverson.
So far this season, McCoy has 68 carries and 21 pass receptions for a total of 89 touches. There are only four players in the NFL that have handled the ball more this season. So, at 3-1, Buffalo is currently in first place in the AFC East, a game ahead of the Patriots and the Jets. Is it an early season fluke, or are the Bills legit? Phil Sims from the NFL Today on CBS joined us on the Bengals Game Plan Show to discuss that and much more.
I don't know if it's going to be a sellout game or not down there in Cincinnati this week, but I'll tell you what, there's a good football team coming in to play the Bengals, and that's the Buffalo Bills. It's no mirage, that record of 3-1. They are real, and I watched them today, and they're tough. You better, as the old saying goes, you better put the big boy pants on because they make it dirty, dirty in a good way, and they make it tough, and that's why they're 3-1.
Yeah, I'll tell you, they are buying what Sean McDermott is selling, aren't they? I mean, that defense, Phil, they don't do a whole lot of exotic things, but their communication must be extraordinary because they all seem to be in the right place all the time.
I think that's we shouldn't be surprised after the way he handled everything during the offseason and, you know, trading players on offense and defense. You know, I thought they had a really good pair of corners in Ronald Darby and Stephon Gilmore. Boom, out the door, both of them, they go. And they bring in two guys, Tre'Davious White they draft, and they get E.J. Gaines in a trade from the Rams, and they're playing tremendous. Micah Hyde, a free agent from Green Bay, who I always liked. So they're all communicating well, and they're doing it up front, guys, with, you know, I don't know, the cast of Misfit Toys. It's not like they got great names up there, but they are solid. They use their hands great, you know, to hold the linemen up. And it's interesting to watch. And it's, well, you said it. Very well orchestrated. I really have enjoyed watching them the last couple weeks and just judging their players.
Phil Sims is our guest. Let's talk about Tyrod Taylor for a moment because his career passer rating is over 93. He has a winning record as the Bills quarterback. He runs for more than 500 yards every year.
Yep.
He's been to a Pro Bowl. That seems like a pretty good resume to me, but nobody ever seems to talk about Tyrod Taylor as being a good NFL quarterback.
Except me. I'm on the bandwagon. I've been on it since he's been up there.
Mm-hmm.
It annoys me to death. You know, he wasn't a high draft pick. You know, he wasn't in the Heisman run and all this other stuff that we judge these guys on, and we just have a hard time accepting somebody that's not, you know, the so-called franchise guy that we anointed and did all these things for. But this is his third year. and I'm not going to say I've watched every game, but I've watched just about every game, and he does what he's supposed to do and a little more. You know, he's not in an offense that's going to make him a star in the eyes of the public. They like to run it. They're tough. They got a good run-blocking offensive line. And the offense works because of their toughness or run-blocking. LeSean McCoy, have you guys watched him?
Oh, boy.
Does he know there's a thing called age? You're supposed to kind of slow down, not be so slippery when you get up. But he is tremendous.
Yep.
But they do it with the run. LeSean McCoy making plays, and then Tyrod Taylor, very careful with the ball, but makes many plays with his legs. And when he does that, he does it also with his arm on the move, too. So they're a sneaky offense, and Tyrod Taylor gets absolutely no respect. It drives me crazy because I do really like him a lot as an NFL quarterback.
You know, you hear things when people are criticizing Tyrod Taylor. Oh, he can't see the middle of the field. Oh, he leaves the pocket early. Oh, he does this, he does that. I'm in agreement with you guys. I think Tyrod Taylor, bottom line, wins football games. He won football games at the collegiate level. He won football games. You know, the Bengals understand him pretty well. They've seen him when he was in Baltimore, you know, and how he's developed and progressed over the years. And I'll tell you, they have a healthy, healthy dose of respect for Tyrod Taylor and the way he can throw the football. And like you said, Phil, be a dual threat. I mean, that poses a lot of problems. I mean, you know, sometimes the plays he creates are better than the plays that were called.
Well, yes. Listen, they're committed to the run. Rick Dennison wanted Tyrod Taylor when he was a free agent to come to Denver, when he was out there in Denver. But he decided, no, he wanted to go to Buffalo, try to be a starter. He got it done. My son was up there in Buffalo in training camp with him. And, you know, we always talk quarterbacks. I said, what about it? He goes, hey, listen, Dad, you know, Tyrod's a great guy. And, you know, he's really good. I just, you know, I feel bad for him because people don't realize this. And I just thought, wow, that's interesting. Because, you know, quarterbacks, they all hate the other quarterback.
Right.
And so that kind of got my eyes. I went, okay. And so I paid attention. And, look, here's their offense. They run the ball. They do it well. LeSean McCoy makes plays that are not there. Mike Tolbert, my gosh, he's another one. He comes in. If you tackle him at the line of scrimmage, it's going to be second and six because he's falling forward.
Right.
But they're sneaky in their pass attack because they're always looking for ways to get it down the field. They're a big double move team. They're looking for, I don't want to say gadgets, but ways to sneak people deep. They run the ball. They're looking for big plays in the pass game. And Tyrod Taylor and LeSean McCoy give it that, whatever you want to say, the cherry on top that makes it, you know, a pretty tough defense. I mean, pretty tough offense to defend. I will say this week about the Bengals. Your corners, the corners down there need to be great because I think they're going to have to go up there and really play run defense.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're the old, I never said it once as an announcer, eight men in the box. I just said, hey, crowd the line of scrimmage because I think you need to. If you don't, then they're going to control the tempo of the game. As I say, dirty it up, cut down your possessions, and there's just no rhythm to the game. And that's the way they love it, and that's why it's working for them so far.
Phil Simms is our guest. Let's turn to the Bengals. How surprised are you by a 1-3 start?
Well, of course, I'm surprised. You know, it's not that they're 1-3. Maybe it's how it happened and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the big one was just losing the game to the Houston Texans when, you know, I went back. I watched it on TV that night. And I went, gosh almighty. And then I went back and looked at it and I go, the Bengals had about 15 chances to win that game.
Yep.
And they just refused to do it.
Yep.
So that's, you know, that's kind of, it could end up being the difference in their season. But I will say the last 2 weeks, watching them, there seems to be, you know, there just seems to be a little more life, energy. Andy Dalton looks almost relieved. And they had Green Bay on the ropes. And when you're playing Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Matt Stafford, especially those three, when you get them down, you got to go. Never let up and never play like, well, we'll kick the field goal here because they make them drive for a touchdown. You give any of those quarterbacks four downs, I'm telling you, it's going in the end zone. And I thought they played a little safe once they had the lead. they gave Aaron Rodgers a chance, and you saw what happened.
Phil, you're obviously an incredible quarterback. And by the way, the studio show is going to win an Emmy with you on the set. I just got to tell you that right now. I mean,
I don't know about that, but we're going to loosen that thing up, Big Dave. I'll tell you that. We're going to start to, I got a lot to say, and I want to get it out.
I hear you.
It's good. I'm enjoying it.
You're doing a hell of a job.
I'll tell you this. It's a long day.
I hear
that.
Wow.
And, that first week I did it, I was like, oh, my gosh, I am truly out on my feet. I was so tired. It's about a 13-hour day,
Oof. And
you don't get to quite watch the games the way you want because there's so much other stuff going on that we have to do.
Right.
So that kind of disappoints me. And I'm literally watching games all day today to catch up because what I couldn't see on Sunday. So that's interesting, but it is fun, and it's great for me to really follow the league instead of just two teams that I'm getting ready for that weekend.
So my question about quarterback play, which you were extraordinary, your Super Bowl MVP.
Well, not in the
winning.
Eyes of Bill Parcells,
Well,
ahead.
Nobody was extraordinary in the eyes of Bill Parcells, but
yeah.
Andy Dalton, the first 2 weeks, had a quarterback rating of maybe 40. The last 2 weeks, quarterback rating of 120 and then 140s. Now he's got a quarterback rating of 90.6, which is kind of where he is. But you go from the outhouse to the penthouse. You know, outhouse for 2 weeks, penthouse for 2 weeks. How do quarterbacks do that? I mean, how do you guys – everybody talks about a corner has to have amnesia and forget about a play. How do quarterbacks compartmentalize and move on? This is only the second time in Andy Dalton's sports career, youth sports, high school, college, pro, where he lost three games in a row. And then all sports, baseball, basketball, football, he'd never lost three in a row until last year they lost three in a row, and they lose three in a row to start this season. The only time it's ever happened to him. How do quarterbacks, put it away and move on?
Man, that's a really good question. It does take resolve. And it's just like it's you against the world. You got to shut it out. And I got in situations like Andy's in a couple times in my career. And I remember one day after practice, a couple times, just going, okay, if I'm going down, by God, I'm going down my way.
Right.
And that's really what I thought. And I just took it to the practice field and turned. Practice became better, and our performance on the field changed too. And I'm not saying he was playing careful. The Houston game, he made some throws. But, there's a few things. One, I'm bothered by the fact that some of the quarterbacks did very little action in the preseason. I think they get so little work. If Andy Dalton is going to play one quarter in the first preseason game, then give him 10 throws.
Right.
Because it's so important. And, to me it seems like a lot of guys get off to a slow start because they, there's no feeling. They haven't been in the action enough. And everybody's so worried about not being getting the quarterback beat. You can get the quarterback throws without getting him hit in preseason.
Mm-hmm.
But the last two, maybe it is the change. I do see a little bit of different play calling. Play calling is so important to the quarterback. And the other big thing is you got to give the quarterback some friendly throws. In other words, Tom Brady is going to complete 15 passes against you no matter what every game because Josh McDaniels is going to get the first guy open.
Right.
Tom, we're going to put this formation out there. We're going to do this. They're going to do this. And I'm telling you, Tom, Rob Gronkowski is going to be open over here in the flat. He's going to catch it, break a tackle, and get 15, and you'll be okay.
Right.
And they do that. And that's what an offensive coordinator has to do. And I really mean this. When I watched his last two games, I saw some energy. And I even saw more pep on the football. He threw with conviction. And I did not see that in the first two, especially in the Houston game. I thought he was a little understandable. Four interceptions, or was it four in the first game?
Yes, against Baltimore.
Well,
against Baltimore.
That would tighten me up too, brother, I'm telling you. Because now everybody, you got to play a game where your number one goal is not to lose the game. And that's a terrible way to have to do it as a quarterback. But all quarterbacks get in that situation. He survived it. And these last two, he truly physically looks like a different guy.
Phil, did you notice a difference in tempo in him getting out of the ball out of his hand quicker? I mean, he completed 16 in a row in this last win up in Cleveland, 16 in a row, and it was like you know, slants, quick throws, you know, the screen package, the quick passing game was big. And like you said, get my quarterback's feet on the ground, get him confident and all that. And I'll tell you, Bill Lazor, I thought, has done a hell of a job as the offensive coordinator. You say you've noticed a difference from the first two games to the last two with the change of coordinator?
Absolutely. I see it. I can see it in the tempo of the game, like you said. I mean, Andy Dalton, even when he ran with more. I was like, wow, he even looks faster. I mean, it's amazing.
Right.
And I'm serious. That's one of the first things I thought, God, he looks faster today. As I was watching when I was watching the Green Bay game, I was like, man, he looks different. It's amazing. So that means a lot of things were weighing on everybody's mind. That's a tough thing to overcome, having a coach fired. But maybe it freed him up a little. It looks like to him, you know, look, he's been a solid NFL quarterback. And, you know, now that he's got this thing straightened out a little, now the hard part comes. Can you drive it forward? And like I said, you as a QB, you got to believe, and you got to see it, and you got to let it go. And that's the guys that have success, big time success in the NFL. And, you know, he's capable of that. You know, put your feet in the ground, believe it, and really let it go. And but going this week, it's going to be a tough week. Because the one big thing going for the Bengals in this game, Dan and Dave, is Buffalo has just gone through two wars with the Denver Broncos and the Atlanta Falcons.
Right.
And I think we all know that, you know, there's always got to be a let-up. You can't grind out 16 games in the NFL. And here they are on the road for the second week. And last week, that was a knockdown drag-out down there in Atlanta.
Yep.
And Buffalo out-hit the Atlanta Falcons, and that's why they won. To think you're going to do that every single week in the league is tough. So this is, to me, that's the emotional and physical advantage that the Bengals have going over Buffalo in this week's game.
Now that's something I hadn't considered. We'll see if it helps the Bengals get their first home win on Sunday. I'm guessing that for many of you, Pete Rose was your childhood sports hero, especially if you're older than 50 and grew up near Cincinnati. Well, I grew up a little bit south of Buffalo, and my childhood sports hero was O.J. Simpson. The first NFL game I ever attended in person was a Monday night game in 1973 between the Bills and Kansas City Chiefs. That was the year O.J. became the first runner in NFL history to top the 2,000-yard mark, and he did it in a 14-game season. O.J. was my guy. My bedroom walls were a Simpson shrine. When I was a paperboy as a kid, I ran from house to house pretending that I was the juice. And when Buffalo traded him to San Francisco for 5 draft picks, it might have been the saddest day of my childhood. So now let's fast forward to adulthood and get to my O.J. Simpson story. In 1994, the final year of the Bills' run of 4 straight trips to the Super Bowl, I was working as a TV sports anchor at WTVH5 in Syracuse, New York, and I covered a playoff game in Buffalo between the Bills and Raiders. It's notable because it's the coldest weather game in Bills history. The temperature at kickoff was 0, and the wind chill was minus 32. My station got 3 press passes for every Bills home game, one for a reporter, one for a videographer, and one for a videographer's assistant who could help with the equipment. Well, that day, the videographer's assistant was my then-girlfriend and now wife, Peg. It was somewhat legit. She did help carry the equipment into the stadium, but was mostly there to watch the game. When we got to the stadium, I told her there was no way she was going to stay outside in that minus 32 degree wind chill, so after we helped the videographer with his gear, me and Peg headed for the comfort of the press box. Alas, it was a playoff game, and it was packed. Only people that specifically had a press box seat could get in. So, being a gentleman, or idiot, you make the call, I told Peg to use my pass for the warm press box, and I would use the other pass to watch the game from the sideline. Bad move. I had dress shoes on, I didn't have a warm enough winter coat, and there was no way I was going to make it through 4 quarters in those frigid conditions. So I went looking for a warm spot where I could still follow the game, and I found one in the Bills' weight room. The heat was on, there was a little black and white TV, and there was a small group of people sitting in front of that TV. The NBC Sports pregame show crew consisting of a few former coaches and players, including, you guessed it, O.J. Simpson. Well, this was a dream come true. Not only had I found warmth and a TV, but I was about to watch an NFL playoff game basically looking over the shoulder of the guy I grew up idolizing. I was one of about three or four guys standing there, and as we watched the game, we could hear what O.J. and the guys were talking about. And it wasn't strictly the game. At one point, O.J. started discussing a recent limo ride and what he and a female companion had done in the back of the limo. Well, right after he finished telling the story, O.J. noticed for the first time that there were a handful of strangers standing nearby, including yours truly. Simpson wasn't pleased, so he summoned a security guy who asked us to leave the weight room and go back out onto the field. In short, O.J. Simpson forced me to watch the rest of the game outdoors with a minus 32 degree wind chill. It's obviously not the worst thing he's ever been accused of doing, but it's not exactly what you're hoping for the first time you're in the presence of your childhood hero. And that is my O.J. Simpson story. Still to come, lapse keys to the game, but first, this week's Fun Facts segment, where you get to know the person under the pads. Time for some fun facts with rookie defensive lineman Ryan Glasgow. You have an older brother in the NFL, Graham, with the Lions. You have a younger brother, Jordan, who's a safety at the University of Michigan. How bad was the roughhousing in the Glasgow house when you were a kid?
Growing up is pretty tough, I have to say, especially for my little brother. Because once Graham and I grew up and kind of became friends and stopped bickering, we kind of just picked on Jordan. So he got the brunt of it. But growing up, it was wrestling constantly, fighting constantly, punching constantly.
Did I hear correctly, though, that the younger brother cost you a tooth?
Yes, you did. We were racing around the cul-de-sac on bikes. He had training wheels on. He stopped suddenly, trying to cheat and turn around so he would win. I flipped over his bike in my handlebars and knocked out my front tooth.
We're doing Fun Facts with Ryan Glasgow. You are the son of doctors. How demanding were they when you were a kid?
They weren't too demanding, actually. It was kind of just do what you want to do, like do what you like. My dad and my mom never forced us to play sports or anything. Actually, they kind of wanted to steer us away, especially my mom from football, but we all wanted to play. And the school aspect, they're way more demanding than athletically. Needed good grades all the time, or else they threatened to withdraw us out of sports. So it was definitely good grades from there on out.
And how did you convince them that you wanted to play football?
Well, I told my dad I wanted to play. I was trying to play the sentimental card because he played, and he played in college, so that's why I originally told him I wanted to play. But then he basically got it out of me. I was in fourth or fifth grade. I just said I wanted to hit people because Graham and I would still fight constantly, same with my little brother. So he's like, yeah, that sounds good. We'll sign you up for football.
We're doing Fun Facts with Ryan Glasgow. Your dad is a team doctor at Northern Illinois University. How much were you around the team when you were young, and how much of an impact did that have on your love of this game?
It had a major impact. I mean, I kind of saw how a college operated, and I mean, the whole town of DeKalb would come together and watch the Huskies when I was growing up. And so I'd basically go to almost every home game. I was lucky enough to attend a couple away games with the team growing up, and it was awesome. I thought that was the highest level of football you could achieve, and it was my dream to go there. But then as I grew older, I realized that, you know, there are bigger programs out there, and that really started when I went to an NIU game at Michigan when I was probably in fourth or fifth grade. And I'm like, wow, this stadium is a little bit bigger than Husky Stadium. Nothing against the Huskies. I love them as a program. They're my first team growing up. But when I saw the big stage like that, I was like, wow, I really want to do that.
All three of you guys wound up at Michigan, started out as walk-ons, earned scholarships. How proud are the three of you of achieving that?
It's kind of not something you think about. I mean, I kind of knew Graham was going to do it, but when Jordan got his, being primarily a special teamer and someone who's trying his best to get on the field on defense, I was so proud of him. It was when I heard the news and he called me, I felt happier for him than I felt for myself, and I'm sure that's how Graham felt for me, and that's how I felt for Graham, and vice versa for everyone involved. I was just really proud of him and how hard he's worked to get there.
We're doing Fun Facts with Ryan Glasgow. About midway through your Michigan career, the school changed coaches, and Jim Harbaugh wound up as your head coach. From afar, he seems half nuts. What would surprise us about Jim Harbaugh?
See, I'm not quite sure anything would surprise people nowadays. But basically, he really cares about his players. I mean, I feel like that's evident, but it can get kind of lost in the shuffle with everything he does or everything the media reports about. He's a player's coach. He's tough on you, but he wants what's best for you. And that's definitely clear when you're a player for him, but maybe from the outside looking in, it's not as evident.
You earned an economics degree. How difficult was juggling football in the classroom?
It was tough. Admittedly, I struggled when I first got to Michigan, but I straightened it out with some coercing from my parents and some guidance from my older brother. I figured it out, and I was able to attain a pretty tough degree at Michigan.
You were a fourth-round draft pick, one of eight guys on your defense drafted into the NFL. Did you have any sense at the time how talented your fellow defensive guys were at Michigan?
Last year and the year before, you kind of had the feeling, but I mean, when we were all young guys thrown in there into the fire at Michigan playing redshirt freshmen, and sophomores, you didn't really know. I mean, we had a 5-7 record my redshirt sophomore year, so you didn't really know. I mean, the NFL seemed so far away and almost out of the question at that point for a lot of us. But we worked hard, played together, and it worked out for mostly everyone.
We're visiting with Ryan Glasgow. Aside from football, what are you good at?
Wow. Aside from football, what am I good at? Pretty good at video games. I play Rainbow Six Siege. If anyone wants my gamer tag, we could squad up. That's probably the only thing off the top of my head. I mean, growing up, I was an animal at Dance Dance Revolution. Absolutely amazing.
Come on.
I'm not kidding. I mean, if I could find one around here, I might put up a video of it because there was this arcade that I would go to growing up, and I had it for free. Would literally spend hours on it. I was amazing at it.
Did it help your footwork for football?
Oh, I think so.
Aside from football, have you had any other jobs?
Yes, two. One was a landscaping job. Did it for about 3 weeks and called it quits. Didn't like it. Another was an internship doing social media and filing for a real estate company in Michigan when I was in college. It was an internship just to get some work experience in the business sector. And that was all right. I quit a month early, but it was all right. I mean, that's when football was still kind of out of the realm of possibility for me for the next level. So I decided I had to do something if I wanted to move on in the business world after school.
A few more questions for Ryan Glasgow. You're from the Chicago area. Who were some of your heroes growing up?
Oh, Brian Urlacher, first and foremost, Lance Briggs, Tommy Harris was a beast. All those guys were animals. Thomas Jones, in middle school, elementary school, those are the guys I watched weekend in, weekend out in football season. Would watch all their games. Broke my heart in the Super Bowl. I forget which one it was, but against the Colts. Devin Hester, obviously. All those guys.
I know you used to play basketball. I expected a Michael Jordan to be thrown in there.
Well, since we're talking about football, I thought I'd stick to football. But basketball, yeah. When I was growing up watching the Bulls a lot, it was kind of in the dog days of the Bulls organization. Ben Gordon, Kirk Heinrich. I would watch them on Comcast Sportsnet like every day. It was like a talking point in our math class. So we'd review the game every day at the beginning of class. So those are the guys I kind of remember watching growing up.
It has to sink in for me now that I'm talking to guys that are post-Michael Jordan.
Exactly.
Yeah, you guys are younger than I remember. Mm-hmm. All right, last question for Ryan Glasgow. The next-to-last game of this season on Christmas Eve is against your brother's team, the Detroit Lions. What kind of plans does the Glasgow family have?
I think we're bringing a lot of family down here, obviously. It's going to be a big game. It's going to be pretty wild. Graham and I have been on the same team. I mean, outside of him being a freshman in college and me in eighth grade, and the same with freshman in college and me a senior in high school, and the same with high school and middle school. This is the third year maybe in our lives we haven't been on the same team. So it's going to be crazy seeing him out here and out there. It's going to be wild. I just can't really, like, describe it. I mean, I'm sure I won't be able to until after the game, but it'll be crazy.
He's an offensive lineman. You're a defensive lineman. Who wins head-to-head?
I'm going to have to take me, no question. But, I mean, he's a great player, and I enjoyed watching his game on Monday night. I thought he played really well. But as December 24th creeps closer, you know, I'll be watching that film a little more closely.
You're off the hot seat, although if I can get Dance Revolution into this locker room, I'll put you back on the hot seat. Appreciate the time. Best of luck.
Thank you.
With Glasgow, Jordan Willis, and Carl Lawson, the Bengals definitely appear to have fortified their defensive line in this year's draft. Sunday marks the sixth time that the Buffalo Bills have come to Paul Brown Stadium, and they're like a team version of Ben Roethlisberger. For whatever reason, they rarely lose here. The Bills are 4-1 at PBS, including a 16-12 win last year in a game that saw A.J. Green and Giovanni Bernard suffer season-ending injuries. Sorry for bringing that up. Let's find out what Dave Lapham thinks the Bengals need to do to avenge that defeat and improve to 2-3 this season. All right, Lap, time for this week's Keys to the Game.
Well, Dan, I think the Buffalo Bills are the greatest example of don't beat themselves. More games are lost by mistakes than won by big plays, and Buffalo is a living example of that. Possession is going to be huge in this football game. Their plus-6 ratio is tied for second best in the NFL. The Bengals are -5, tied for second worst in the NFL. Buffalo doesn't give the football away. They've got one interception all year long. They have not fumbled the football. They're one of four teams not to lose a fumble. The Bengals are one of five teams not to recover a fumble. The Bengals have gone 15 games without recovering a fumble. It's time that tide turns. The Bengals have not won the turnover battle, Dan, in their first four games. They're minus the first two games, even in the next two games. Got to win the turnover ratio, particularly in this game, against a team like the Buffalo Bills, the way they're built. On the red zone, Buffalo's offense, 2 out of every 3 times they're scoring touchdowns, tied for 4th in the league. Defensively, they're only allowing 36.4 touchdown percentage, 3rd in the league, top 5 in both of those categories. As we know, the Bengals struggle in the red zone. Their first 6 attempts, no touchdowns. First 3 attempts, no points. Last 5 red zone opportunities, though, 2 in Green Bay, 3 in Cleveland, 5 for 5 touchdowns. That streak has to continue because the Buffalo Bills are in the top 10 at number 9 in red zone touchdown percentage allowed. And finally, the second quarter, it's odd that both teams have this trend established in the second quarter. When you look at Buffalo only has allowed 6 points in the first quarter, 9 in the third quarter, 10 in the fourth quarter. In the second quarter, they gave up 29. And that's a high percentage. I mean, that's 53% of their points allowed. The Bengals, on the flip side, the Bengals have scored 7 points in the first quarter, 13 in the third, 3 in the fourth, 41 in the second quarter. That's 64% of their points scored. Looks like the second quarter is where the Bengals have to make hay. It's where the Bills have struggled a little bit. Get that lead built in the second quarter, sustain it, and finish it in the second half, Dan. And the Bengals, I think, will be in good shape.
And that's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe and give it a rating or leave a comment. It would be great to know how many of you are listening and what you think. I'm Dan Hoard. Thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth podcast.